Now we're holding on Lamed Aleph Omid Beis, the sixth line of the wide lines. We said in the Mishnah B'Taniyas Brachos Uklolos, on fast days, we said that we read Brachos Uklolos, which we said yesterday that nowadays we don't do that. We read Vayechal. So, first of all, it could be a difference in Minhag, just like we saw that there were a couple of other things that have been changed. But the other possibility, we said also the Torah says that you do that in the morning and then Vayechal in the afternoon. But the other possibility we said is that we're talking about over here about Taniyas for rain or other troubles like that, like we learned from the Sechta Taniyas. Whereas the ones where we lay in Vayichal are the scheduled ones that have to do with the Churban as well as Taina Festa. Anyway, we said in the Mishnah, the Ein Mafsik in the Klolos, we're not allowed to break during the Klolos. You're not allowed to have an Aliyah break in the middle of it. So the Moses Minah Hanimili, where do we know that from? Omer Abchir Bagam de Omer Abasi, the Omer Kro, as the Pasuk says, Musar Hashem Bni Altimas, the rebuke, the Musar of Hashem, my son, don't reject it. Now, what does that mean, therefore? So when if a person interrupts in the middle of there, it's like he's saying that I reject it, I can't stand it anymore, and therefore I have to stop. Rashi brings from Masechta Sofrim that says that actually we learn it from the end of the pasuk. It's not the first half that the Gemara is quoting over here, Musa Hashem b'ni al-timas, but rather the second half of the pasuk, which continues, "Va'al tokutz b'teichachtoi." Literally, it means don't be disgusted by his teichacha. But we learn the word tokutz is also maloshin kotzim, maloshin like cutting it up. So don't cut up his teichacha by dividing it into separate aliyos. So that's one reason. Rish Lakish amar l'fisha ein omer bracha ala puranos. Rish Lakish says a different reason because you don't make a bracha about puranos. Now, when the puranos actually happens, then you do because chayev adam mevarach al ra, etc. But we're talking about here where the Torah is predicting puranos, then it's not right to be making a bracha on it. On the side of here, it brings from Masechta Sofrim and Tosfos also bring this that since the pasuk says ima anechi b'tzara, the pasuk says Hashem is with the Jewish people in their tzaras, so Hashem says it's not right then that the Jewish people should be benching me, should be saying a bracha on the Torah when they're talking about the tzaras, when they're talking about the klolos that they're going to be punished with. So therefore, so that's another reason why not to break it up, because then you'd have to make a bracha in the middle. Oh, a couple of them, Mepharshim asked, didn't we learn in the previous perek that in the times of the Mishnah, they didn't have every oila, not every oila made a bracha, only the first oila made a bracha at the beginning and the last oila made a bracha at the end. So there was no oila, there was no bracha for the middle aliyah. So in that case, what's the problem? And how are you making a bracha on clawless? There's a few different answers. One of them being the Taz says that actually when we said before that the beginning and the end don't make the bracha, that only the first oila makes the first bracha and the last oila makes the last bracha. The Taz says that wasn't that it had to be that way. That was you could do it that way. But if the middle oilam wanted to say brachas even before the chachamim were masakan, then everybody should, then they could. So therefore, you could conceivably have that there are brachas for this section. And there's a couple of other answers as well. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ela Hechi Ovid. So how do you do it? Since you don't want to say a bracha on the klolos themselves. Tana, so we learn in a braisa, kshu maschil, when you're beginning the teichacha, maschil posik shalifnehem, then you begin at least one posik before them. Tosfos says, to be exact, I mean, you have to go, as usual, the rule is, as we had previously, that you have to begin either by a parasha break or three or more psukim away from it. So you can't necessarily begin the pasuk before the teichacha because that's going to be within three psukim of a parasha break. But we mean, in other words, some place before it. Uksho mesayim, and when you finish mesayim a pasuk shalachrei, and then you finish the aliyah with the pasuk after them. So we do that. If you look in b'chukosai, you have the aliyah that includes the teichacha begins four psukim before the teichacha. And then the one in Kisaba, the aliyah for the aliyah that includes the teichacha begins eight psukim before it. So this way you're not making a bracha directly on the teichacha. You're making it before. In both cases the aliyah ends a pasuk or two after the teichacha. Omer Abaya, lo shonu ala b'klolos shebetoras koyanim. Now all this applies, says Abaya, only to the teichacha in Toras Koyanim in Chumash Vayikra, meaning the one in Bechukosai. Ava klolos should Mishnah Torah post it. But the ones in Mishnah Torah, the ones in Devarim, those you would be allowed to interrupt in the middle of them. You would be allowed to make a break, an aliyah break in the middle of them. Although the minhag, even from the time of the Rishonim already, is not to do so. But in principle, you could. My time, and now what's the difference? Why are the ones in Vayikra considered so much worse than the ones in Devarim? The reason is, halola b'loshen rab mamoris. Number one, the ones in Chumash Vayikra are phrased in the plural. V'im lo yisishmu uli, v'shavarti as go'un uzchem, v'sam lo rikkechachem, etc. The whole thing is phrased in the plural. So therefore, it's like a more severe curse addressed to the whole Jewish people. And Moshe Piagvura Amran, and Moshe said them dictated by Hashem. So therefore they're stronger clawless. Vahalola Balashan Yochid Amoris, whereas the ones in Chumash Devarim are phrased in the singular. So meaning in other words, like they're not in a way they're not as severe. They're not addressed, so to speak, to the whole Jewish people. I mean they are, but they're not at least written in a way that sounds like it's speaking to the whole Jewish people. And Moshe Piatzmay Amran, and Moshe said them on his own. Now, what do you mean on his own? In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we actually are up to it now in the afternoon in Yaakov Shir, says that if a person thinks that even one pasuk in the Torah was made up by Moshe himself without it being told by Hashem, then he's an apikurus. So it's included in that person who says ain't Torah minashamayim. So what do we mean over here that Moshe mipi'atzmai omran, that Moshe said them on his own? So Tosfos just says it means uberuach hakodesh. So what does that mean exactly? So different mafoshim talk about the exact details of it. There are several sichas also where the Rebbe addresses this point. There's one in Chelek Dalet, another one in Chelek Yutes, another one in Chelek Lamed Vav. The idea is, in other words, that all of them were said by Hashem to Moshe. That's why they're all part of Chumash, after all, because that's what Chumash is, was dictated to Hashem by Hashem to Moshe. But the difference is that Chumash Devarim most of Chumash Devarim is phrased in first person, Moshe speaking about himself. And what it is the Ashba, the Nevuah that Hashem gave him, was sort of like it gets filtered through Moshe's own das, unlike with the other four Chumashim, where Moshe is speaking purely as a Shliach of Hashem. And in a couple of those sichas, that ever develops the idea that that was necessary because that serves as the source for the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, that Torah can be filtered through the human brain and still the ideas that come out of that are part of Torah. So an esinas koyach for that is the fact that Hashem gave a portion of the Torah in a way where it's filtered through Moshe rather than Moshe just receiving dictation. And in a different one of those sichas, the Rebbe Torah in Chelek Lamed Vav, the Rebbe talks about the idea that this is also connected with the fact we're now in Chodesh Shvat, when Moshe, it says, translated the Torah into 70 languages. That was also meant to make it that no matter what language you learn in, and no matter what mentality you learn Torah with, what you're learning is still Torah. So for all those reasons, we're saying when we say Moshe mipi'atzmai omran, we don't mean that Moshe made them up by himself. Chas v'shalom. It means that the nevuah that Moshe received was a different kind, where it's filtered through his understanding rather than Moshe just being a shliach, where it completely passes through. For that reason, most of Chumash Devarim is phrased in the singular, and the Torah also is phrased in third person. Moshe doesn't say, I will do such and such. He says, in Hashem's name, Hashem will do such and such. So it's all part of that idea. In other words, that he's acting as the conduit, so to speak, through which Hashem is giving that chumash. So therefore, the point is, for those two reasons, because it's phrased in the singular, and because it's Moshe mipi'atzmai omran, it's a different degree of ruach hakodesh. It's a different degree of nevuah. Therefore you're allowed. Therefore, Abaye says you'd be allowed to interrupt during those klolos. So the Gemara tells in that connection, Levi Babuti Havakori. Levi Babuti was one time reading the Teuchacha in Chumash Devarim, become a gamgam, and he was like mumbling through his way through it. He's like he's reading it very quickly, and it's like it's hard for him to do it, showing in other words that he's having a hard time with it. Kameh de Rav Huna, in front of Rav Huna, Ba'aruri, he was reading the Arurim, he was reading the Teuchacha in Parashas Kisavah. Rabbuna tells him, do as you wish. If you want to stop because you can't stand reading this Torah anymore, then do that. Because, like we said, that this that we said you're not allowed to interrupt is only the ones in Chumash Vayikra, Avashav Mishnah Torah Posek. But the ones in Chumash Devarim, you would be allowed to interrupt. So you, Levi Babuti, if you're having such a hard time with it that you're mumbling and stumbling your way through it, then fine, go ahead and stop the Aliyah over there and somebody else will take over the rest. Okay. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rav Shimon Elazar, right? Ezra Tikkun Lahem Yisrael. Ezra made the following takana for the Jewish people. She occurred in Klolos Shabbatotas Koyanim Koyanim Atzeres. They should be reading the Klolos in Chumash Vayikra in Parashas Bechu Kosei before Shavuos. V'shem Mishnah Torah Koyanim Rosh Hashanah. And the ones in Chumash Devarim should be read before Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says, my timer, why? Amar Abaye, v'yitemin ha-shlokish, k'desha tichla ha-shana v'kila lo'yseha. So that the year and its curses end, in other words, the idea is we want to finish off the curses before Rosh Hashanah, and as we're going to say now in a second, Shavuos is also a type of Rosh Hashanah, and therefore we want to end the klolos before that. Tosfos discusses the question. So now we do that, but we don't do it right before Rosh Hashanah. We do it with one more parasha in between. We always have parashas. The Teichacha in Vayikra is in parashas Bechol Kosei. We always have at least parashas Bamidbar before Shavuos. Same thing with Rosh Hashanah. The Teichacha is in Kisavai. We always have Nitzavim or Nitzavim Vayelach before Rosh Hashanah. So why is that? So first, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Nissim, which is Rabbeinu Nissim Goin, who says that because the truth is Nitzavim, at least when it comes to Nitzavim, the truth is Nitzavim has some curses in it as well, and therefore we want to finish all those off before Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because the fact is Hazinu also has, so the Shiras Hazinu also has some. So rather, what it is we want to have at least one Shabbos without curses before Rosh Hashanah and before Shavuos. So therefore we want to have in other words, Kisavah is going to be the curses. We want to have like a neutral parasha, Nitzavim, which, okay, it has curses, but they're not as severe, kind of. And then we have Rosh Hashanah. And the same thing with Shavuos. We want to have at least one neutral parasha, Bamidbar, before Shavuos, so we don't have the klolos right before Shavuos. So the Gemara says, Bishlemish of Mishnah Torah. Okay, I understand the ones in Chumash Devarim, Ika, so you have the purpose, Kadesh Tichla Shana Vekil Leseah, because you want to end off the year you want to have the Klolos at the end of the year. You don't want to begin a new year with Klolos or to have them too close to Rosh Hashanah. Fine, Rosh Hashanah is, of course, the beginning of the new year. Elash of Torah's Koinim, but the ones in Chumash Vayikra, Otto Atzeras Rosh Hashanah, Shavuos is not Rosh Hashanah, so why Davka are we making a point of doing it then? And the answer is Ain. As a matter of fact, yes. Atzeres nami Rosh Hashanah. As a matter of fact, yes. Shavuos is a Rosh Hashanah. The Tinanu v'atzeres al peiros eilon. As it says in the Mishnah at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, that on Atzeres, on Shavuos, Hashem judges the world regarding the fruit of the trees, how the fruit crop is going to be for the coming year. So therefore, in a certain sense, Shavuos is also a Rosh Hashanah. Marsha talks about the idea that you also have, there's a connection as follows. The Teichacha in Parashas Bechol Kosei is mainly talking about events that happen around the Churban Bayis Rishon. So therefore, we want it before Shavuos, which is when the Torah was given, to show, in other words, we want to recommit ourselves to learning and reaccepting the Torah. And at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, they still had the schus of the Ovos, which is why that Teichacha ends with the Zecharti as Britzi Yaakov, Ba'af as Britzi Yitzchak, etc. Whereas the ones in Devarim doesn't really mention the schus Ovos, because by that point, the schus Ovos had really been used up. So the idea is, what we want is, the ones of the Bayis Rishon, we want them to end before Shavuos. We want to have parashas Bamidbar in between to represent the idea. We want the numbers of the Jewish people to go back up like they were in Chumash Bamidbar. So therefore, that's why we have parashas Bamidbar in between. As far as Rosh Hashanah and Nitzavim, the idea is parashas Nitzavim talks about Shuvah. The theme of Rosh Hashanah is also Shuvah. So we're saying that we want to do Shuvah that we want to do the tshuva of Nitzavim and the tshuva of Rosh Hashanah and get out of this galus, which is why we do it in that order. Okay. The Gemara interjects with a different point. Tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer. If old people tell you to tear down something and young people are telling you to build, so you would think for sure you should listen to the young people. Isn't building always better than destroying? Nevertheless, no, stirv al tivna. Nevertheless, tear down, follow the advice of the old people, don't follow the advice of the young people. But they should stir us as Cain and Binyan, because when old people, and we don't just mean physically old, we mean, in other words, old as in Tamar Chachamim, when they tell you to tear down Binyan, then that really is a constructive purpose. They're telling you to do it for a constructive purpose. Or Binyan Na'orim Stira. On the other hand, when young people who don't have that kind of experience in life and in Torah are telling you to build, very often it can be that it comes out that it's actually a destructive thing. That's actually not for a constructive purpose. The Simon Ladover, Rechavam ben Shloimeh, a way of remembering that is to consider what happened with Rechavam, where when he first became king, so the people are telling him, you need to make things easier on us. We had high taxation and a lot of labor under Shloimeh to build his palace and the Bismikdash and so forth. We want you to give us a break. So he goes first to his older advisors, and they tell him, give in to them, listen to what they have to say, and then they'll be loyal subjects. Whereas then the younger advisors say, don't. Show them who's boss, and he did. He followed the younger ones and tried to show them who's boss, and they ended up rebelling against him. So we see, in other words, that it's not so good to follow, even though the young ones seem to be saying something constructive. Show them who's boss. In fact, it turned out to be terribly destructive. Why are we mentioning this point over here? On the face of it, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything that we talked about in the Gemara before this. So there's actually an explanation. Well, first of all, we just had Tanya Reb Shimon Elazar Omer. So we just had Reb Shimon Elazar had said about the Takana of Ezra, of reading these parashiyos in those respective times of the year. So therefore, the Gemara is bringing something else that we learn in a braisa that Reb Shimon Elazar said. But I saw also an explanation, something along the lines of, you're going to think to yourself, so why is it so great that we have the klolos before Rosh Hashanah? Adrabba, let's have them further back, nowhere near Rosh Hashanah and nowhere near Shavuot, let's say. So you're going to think that maybe the Zkenim don't know what they're talking about. No, realize that the Zkenim know better than you do. And even though they're doing something which seems to be destructive, nevertheless, there's a constructive purpose in it. Okay. Getting back now to, we talked about in the Mishnah about that you read the Torah on Monday and Thursday and Shabbos afternoon. And we said in the Mishnah of Ein Olam Lahem Min HaMinyan, what you read on those times does not count towards what you're reading on Shabbos. In other words, Shabbos, you still have to start over from the beginning of the parasha. So Tanan Abana, we learned in a Braisa about that. Mokim Shemafsikin B'Shabbos Shachris, the place where we ended off the previous Shabbos in the morning, so the end of the previous parasha, Shom Koden B'Mincha, we begin from the following parasha, Mincha of that Shabbos. The Mincha Shom Koden Basheni, wherever we end by Mincha of Shabbos is where we begin on Monday. Basheni Shom Koden Bachamishi, where we end on Monday is where we begin on Thursday. Bachamishi Shom Koden Shabbos Haba, Divir Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, then where we end on Thursday is where we do the following Shabbos. So take, for example, let's say this week, which is Parshas B'Shalach. So let's say Rav Meir would be saying, last Shabbos afternoon, we would have read the beginning of Parshas B'Shalach, let's say Rishon of Parshas B'Shalach. Then on Monday, we would be reading Sheni of the Shalach. On Thursday, Shlishi. And then on Shabbos, this coming Shabbos, we'd be beginning from Revi. That's what the mayor is saying. So each time, so you're laning each part only once. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Makam Shemafsikin b'Shabbos Shachris, wherever we ended the previous Shabbos in the morning, Shom Koden b'Mincho b'Sheni or b'Chamishi, Ula Shabbos Haba, exactly at that point is where we begin each of the following Kriyas on Shabbos afternoon and on Monday and on Thursday and the following Shabbos. And Omer Rav Zeira says, of course, that's the halacha, as we know. Halacha, makam shemafsikin b'Shabbos Shachris, shom koren b'mincho b'sheni u'v'chamish 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 haba. That's exactly what we do. So we read the beginning of Parshas B'Shalach on Shabbos afternoon of Parshas Bo'i, then again the same portion on Monday of B'Shalach, the same portion on Thursday of B'Shalach, and the same thing as the first aliyah of Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos Parshas B'Shalach. So the Gemara says, "V'leima halacha of Rabbi Yehuda." Why does Rabbi Zeira have to phrase it at such length? Why doesn't he just say straight out the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? And the reason is, "Mishum da'afki lahu." because there were some Amoraim who flipped around the opinions, who had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda saying that each time you learn something new, and Rabbi Meir saying that you always start from the same place. So therefore, if Rabbi Zera said the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, people would misunderstand what he means. Therefore, we had to clearly say what you actually do in practice. Since we're talking about Kriyas HaTorah, by the way, Tosfos mentions a din over here as far as Kriyas HaTorah, not directly related to what we're learning in the Gemara over here, but still, it's another one of the dinim of Kriyas HaTorah. Two things, actually. Number one, before you lay, you have to practice the laying at least three times. We learn it from a pasuk in Iyov. Practically speaking, you know, you have, if you do chitas, if you do chitas together with trup, and you do shnai mikra ve'echam targum with trup, there's your three times, really. But if you don't, then you have to review it at least three times.
If you're doing it to be able to learn good, you have to really do it.
This is true also, yeah. Yeah. Obviously, when you're younger, you're going to have to review it many more times. And then as you get older, then yeah. Also, Tosfos mentions another din, that when you're leaning, you're not allowed to lean on the bima. Because just like the Torah was received, Moshe was standing and the Jewish people were standing, the same way when you're receiving an aliyah or when you're leaning, you have to be standing, not leaning on the bima. Another machlokes as far as Kriyas HaTorah, the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Poseach V'roya, you open up the Sefer Torah, you look where you're going to be laying, Goylo L'mavorech, then you roll up the Sefer Torah clothes, and then you make the bracha, V'chozer, Poseach V'korei, and then you open the Sefer Torah again, and you start laying, Divir Reb Meir. So according to Reb Meir, the Sefer Torah is rolled closed while you're saying the bracha. One second. Rabbi Yehuda says, Poseach v'roya, umavorech v'korei. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't need all of that. You open up, you look where you're laying, you leave the Sefer Torah open, and you make the bracha with the Sefer Torah open, and then you start laying. So the Gemara says, my time is Reb Meir. Why does Reb Meir say that you have to have the Sefer Torah closed when you're making the bracha? The reason is Kedu'ullah, the reason is like what Ullah said. Here's a different din. That the Chachamim said, the one who's laning is not allowed to help out the Maturgamon. Now, we learned before that you can't have two people saying the Targum anyway, because you want people to listen to it. And if you have two voices, they're not going to hear. But we're talking about, the Rashba says, we're talking about even, for example, like he's saying, like he's unterzogging, he's saying quietly, like in other words, because the Maturgam is having trouble with the Targum, so the Baal Kodei or the Ola is going to unterzog him what he should say from the Targum. He's not allowed to say that. You don't want people to mistakenly think that the Targum was actually written in the Torah. So therefore, the person who's standing in front of the Torah should not be the one saying the Targum, even where he's saying it in an undertone to help out the guy. One second. Hochanami, the same thing. Rav Meir takes the view as far as the brachas. Kadesh lo yomer brachas ksuvim b'Torah. You don't want people to think the brachas are written in the Torah. Therefore, Rav Meir says you have to close the Sefer Torah before you make the brachas. You want to say something?
Yeah, because I was going to say that there's a Targumim, which is explaining maybe in those days what he was saying, and then the person helping with the simple reading of the Torah.
Right, so that's something else. We're not saying, right, so you could have, like nowadays, you have sometimes, when you have an inexpert Baal Koda, then you'll have somebody by the side who's helping him with the Torah. We're not talking about that. We're talking about, in other words, in those days, where they would translate the Kriya Pasuk by Pasuk in Aramaic, as the Ola would lay in a Pasuk and the Metagam would translate, and the Ola would read the next Pasuk and the Metagam would translate, so forth, as we learned in the previous Perek. So then we're saying that if in the middle over there, the Metagam is having trouble with it, so the Ola is not allowed to, like, quietly whisper to him, you know, these are the words that you should be saying. Because we don't want people to think that the Targum was written in the Torah. So by the same token, Rav Meir says, we don't want people to think that the brachas are written in the Torah. Therefore, you have to close the Sefer Torah before you say the brachas.
One second.
Vir Rav Yehuda. What would Rav Yehuda answer to that? He says, the difference is Targum ikulamithi. When it comes to Targum, people might mistakenly think that it's written in the Torah. And then they're going to end up, the next time they write a Sefer Torah, they might actually write the Targum in there. Brachas like a lamithi, but the brachas, everybody knows the brachas are not written in the Torah. So there's no reason, says Rabbi Yehuda, to have to close the Sefer Torah in order to make the brachas. And in fact, Rishonim point out, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there was an advantage in not closing the Torah for the brachas, because that way you have less of a hefsek between the brachas and the beginning of the laning. Like this, if the Sefer Torah is closed, then you have to open it. It takes another second or so between the bracha and the laning. Now, the fact is, you do have different minhagim about it. So Tosfos explains that L'chatchila, you should follow what Reb Meir is saying, because Tosfos apparently learns. Now, there's a lot of discussion about what Tosfos holds exactly, but Tosfos seems to be saying that even according to Reb Yehuda, you could close it. You just don't. Reb Yehuda is saying you don't have to. Nevertheless, Tosfos is saying l'chatchila, you should close it, so that people don't think the brachos are written in the Torah. But b'diyeved, it's not so bad, because Tosfos says we don't have such amei oretz among us now. We're actually going to think the brachos are written in the Torah. So Tosfos learns that you should l'chatchila close the Sefer Torah and then make the brachas and then open it in lane. However, if you do it open, then it's not so bad. L'maisa in Shulchan Aruch, it does pask in that way that you should do that based on what Tosfos says. On the other hand, given that there are other Rishonim who learn that not, that we go according to the straightforward meaning of Rabbi Yehuda, that you shouldn't, maybe even, because again, you're making a hefsek. That is why nowadays you have different minhagim about whether people close the Sefer Torah to make the bracha or whether they leave it open. Even those who leave it open, that Amma mentions, maybe what you should do is you should at least be turning your head to the side rather than looking straight down at the Sefer Torah. That way there's less of a concern that people are going to think the brachas are written in the Torah. So when it comes to finishing the Aliyah, by the way, there you don't have a machloekas. There everybody agrees. You roll the Sefer Torah closed and then you make the bracha. And the reason is, we've shown him explain, because unlike by the beginning, where we can talk about that maybe you should have it open so there's less of a hefsek, by the end, you're anyway going to have to be closing it between your Aliyah and the next Aliyah. So you might as well close it before you make the brachas rather than afterwards.
Even those who
keep it open for the beginning brachas, close it for the end brachas. Yeah. So then yeshiva shashuls, right, exactly. In Delta shashuls, they often make the first bracha with the Sefer Torah open, but the last bracha they still make with the Sefer Torah closed.
Nowadays, also every person who gets mixed with me knows that the bracha is not necessary.
Well, that's what Tosfos is saying. Right. Nowadays, Tosfos is saying, look, nowadadays we know that nowadays there aren't such amei oretz. We're actually going to think that the brachas are written in the Torah. That's why Tosfos is saying. But yeah, but if you do it with the Sefer Torah open, then it's not so bad. Yeah. So Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rav Masna, halacha. So the bottom line halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, Peseach v'royo mevorach b'koreh. You open up the Sefer Torah, you look where you're going to be laning, then you make the bracha and you start laning without closing it in between. So Gemara says again, v'leima halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Why doesn't Rav Zera say straight out that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? And again, the reason is mishum da'afki lahu, because Some of the Chachamim had a different version. They had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir's opinions were switched around, and therefore, if Rabbi Zera said the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, then we would misunderstand. Like this, it's clear what the halacha is. So again, according to Tosfos, we're only talking to the Eved. According to some other Rishonim, we're talking about l'chatchila. That is how you should do it, which is again why you have the reason for the different minhagim nowadays. Okay, more dinim about the Torah. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Masna. Haluchos v'habimos ein behen mishum kedusha. There is no kedusha in luchos and bimos. So Rashi says, I don't know what luchos are. Rashi says, yesh meforshim, that what we mean is the covers of svarim. Meaning, in other words, in those times, the usual kind of svarim that they had were scrolls, like a Sefer Torah, even though other svarim were written as scrolls. However, there was beginning to be developed at that time the concept of a book as we're familiar with it, with individual pages bound inside a cover. So Rashi says that yesh mefoshim, that the luchos of our Gemara, means the covers of such of those kinds of books. Tosfos brings from the Aruch another explanation, that luchos over here means the margins of the Sefer Torah. Meaning, in other words, you have the Sefer Torah has a margin on top, a margin on bottom, a margin empty space between one column and the next. So those are what's considered luchos over here. So when we say ein ben kedusha, in other words, the idea is as long as they're attached to the Sefer Torah, of course they have the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. The point is, if they were cut off, then we're saying they don't have the same degree of kedusha as a Sefer Torah.
Margin means empty space.
It means the empty spaces around the edges, right. The Rambam has a different explanation, that luchos means slates or little boards or whatever on which they write the aleph bays and psukim and whatever for children when they're teaching them. So therefore, so those don't have kedusha to the same extent as actual svarim, because you're only writing it on there in order to teach the kids. And the pashtus, the idea is you write it on there and then you erase it, etc. That's how the Rambam learns. As far as bimos, Rashi says means, for example, the bima that the king would stand on when he's reading the Torah by Hakel. So they had a big bima for him in the Ezra's Nashim. So that doesn't have the degree of kedusha of Torah. Tosfos again brings from the Aruch that bimos also luchos according to him means the margins on top and bottom of the Sefer Torah. Bimos would be the margins between one amud and the next. And again, we're saying they don't have the same degree of kedusha if they're cut off from the Sefer Torah. And the Rambam again understands bimos in the sense like not just the one that the king stood on, but for example, the bima sometimes you have in some shuls you have the bimos on a raised platform. So that platform doesn't have the kedusha of a sefer Torah. It has the kedusha of the rest of the shul. Okay. The Gemara continues. In fact, on the side of it, he brings a gears of the rush. They don't have the kedusha of the Oren, but they do have the kedusha of the shul. So as we learned before, you have dinim about a shul that you can't just sell it for any purpose, but on the other hand, it doesn't have to be put in shameless, let's say. Okay. More dinim about sefer Torah. When a person is wrapping up the Sefer Torah, when a person is closing up and wrapping up the Sefer Torah, he has to put it with the seam in the middle. Now, why is that? Rashi says the reason is because that way you'll be able to tighten it better when you have the seam in the middle. Rabbeinu Hanano gives a reason because in case it rips, then better let it rip on the seam. The seam will come apart, and that way at least you can repair it rather than you don't want it to rip in the middle of a yiriya, and then it's going to rip into the words, and you may not be able to fix it. And that's why we have. That's always when you do Hagba and Glila, then you do that. You're always careful to have the seam in the middle. That's why, based on this Gemara. Why we kiss it from here to there? No, the Gemara doesn't mention that. Apparently, that's minhag. Okay. The Amr of Shvatya Amr of Yechanan, Hagolol Sefer Torah, also when you're rolling up the Sefer Torah, Gololoy Mibachutz Ve'en Gololoy Mibifnim. You wrap it from the outside and not from the inside. We'll explain in a second what this means. Uksho Mahadkoy, and when you're tightening it up, Mahadkoy Mibifnim Ve'en Mahadkoy Mibachutz, then you tighten it from the inside, not the outside. Now, what does that mean? There are many different explanations among Rishonim what this line means. Rashi says it means like this. Suppose that you're wrapping up a Sefer Torah. Now, let's say we're not talking about the Tzibur. Let's say we're talking about that you've been learning from a Sefer Torah in private or with less than a minion. So what happens then? You're not doing Hagba, picking up the Sefer Torah and showing it to everybody like we do. Instead, what you're doing is you're putting the Sefer Torah on your lap and wrapping it up. So now, when you're wrapping it up to begin with, when you're closing it up, you don't want to hold the Eitz Chaim closer to you and start rolling in the direction away from you, because you may cause it to fall to the other end. It's going to fall off your lap. Therefore, what you should do is, it actually says, you're going to hold the Eitz Chaim that are further away from you and roll them inside towards yourself. That way, it's not going to fall off your lap. Then we come to, now you come to, when you finished rolling it closed, and now you're going to tighten it. So now what you do is, you don't want, on the other hand, you don't want to have that you're using the outside Atzei Chaim, because then at that point you still have. So in other words, the Goloi is talking about when you're rolling it to where you need to land. So it's not talking about after you land. It's talking about when you're rolling it to the place where you're going to be landing. So then you roll from the outside again so it doesn't fall off your lap. But when Mahadko, in other words, when you're getting ready to close it after the Kriya, you want to show the Ksiva, you want to show the writing of the Torah to everybody who's there. Therefore, don't cover it with your arms and reach over to the far Atzei Chaim and roll it inward. Rather, at that point, roll it from the inside to the out. Use the inside Atzei Chaim that are closer to your body to close it. That way, you're not covering the writing with your hands. That's how Rashi means. Tosfos brings from Avinu Hananel that we're talking about when you're putting the gautel on the Sefer Torah. You don't want to have the knot of the so golem means you wrap the gautel around the outside of the Sefer Torah. But then when you're knotting it, when you're closing it, or nowadays when they have ones with Velcro or with buckles or whatever, make sure the buckle is on the or the Velcro or whatever is on the inside of the Sefer Torah, because otherwise, if it's on the outside, if it's on the back, you're gonna have to turn over the Sefer Torah in order to undo it, and it's not kabbadik to the Sefer Torah. So therefore, make sure that the knot or whatever it is that you're gonna open is gonna be on the front of the Sefer Torah. Then there's a few other explanations among Rishonim. The Ran brings an explanation that it means that the goyel over here means the magbia. When you're doing hagba, then the sefer Torah, the wording, the lettering of the sefer Torah should be facing you. And then when you're doing glila, then the lettering of the sefer Torah should be facing the one who's doing glila. In which case, we don't do that actually, because we have the one who's holding the sefer Torah holds it with his with the back of the sefer Torah towards the goyel. So the Ran gives a reason, in other words, that you should always have that the writing of the sefer Torah is facing towards the person who's being osik with it right now. But if that's the case, then we don't do that exactly. When it comes to Hagba, it's facing him. When it comes to Glula, then not.
According to the Velt, that they actually do Hagba and they turn it.
So the people who do the Velt that does Hagba and Glula in the air, so maybe in that case, then they're doing Glula still there with the lettering of the Sefer Torah facing them. Maybe.
They shouldn't do from the top, they should do from the bottom ones.
No, that's something else. No. We're not talking. No. According to Rashi's explanation, we're not talking about the top and bottom ones. According to Rashi's explanation of Bachutz and Bifnim, we're talking about the Sefer Torah is lying on your lap. You have the Atzei Chaim on one side are closer to your body, and the Atzei Chaim on the other side are further away from your body. And we're talking about which one do you use to roll it at the beginning and at the end. Yeah. Okay.
And also, like I know, it's kashrut is sold.
You put the garter on the outside. That's something else, right?
No, that's not talking about that.
Okay. V'amar of Shvat, another din. Asara shakoru b'Torah. If you have 10 people who lean from the Torah, now of course you don't usually have 10 aliyahs. What it means, I mean, in principle, we talked about in the previous perek. Sometimes there might be times you're allowed to add aliyahs, but really the maximum you ever have is 8. We mean if you have 10 people gathered together to lean the Torah, because you need a minion. There is actually an explanation that the Torah brings from the Itur, who says that you have this, on Shabbos, you have 7 regular Olim, you have Machdir, you have the Baal Kodeh, and you have the Maturgamon. So you actually have 10 people who are involved in laying the Torah. Anyway, so even if you have 10 of them, Hagodol Shebehem, Golol Sefer Torah, the greatest one among them should be the one who rolls the Sefer Torah. Because, and the reason for that is, Hagololoi Notol Schar Kolon, and the one who rolls up the Torah receives a reward receives the reward of all of them. So the Gemara says, "D'amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, asara shakoru b'Torah." Even if you have 10 people over there, or are there for leaning Torah, hagolol notos schar kolam. Hagolol sefer Torah kibol schar kolam. The one who's golol the sefer Torah receives the reward of all of them. The Gemara says, "What do you mean schar kolam tzavkadai? What do you mean he gets the reward of all of them? What? Why should all of them forfeit their reward just because he's doing that?" Ela'ema kibol schar kenegin kolam. What it means is he receives a reward equal to all of them. So therefore, that's why we want to give it to Gadol. That's why we want to give it to Gadol Shebekolam. Now, there are several different opinions of Rishonim what the word Golol means over here in this part of the Gemara. Does it mean what we think of as Glila? In that case, then the minhag has changed over time, because nowadays Adarabba, we don't give it to Gadol. We usually give it to a kid. So there is another explanation that Golol over here, that Golol over here means Hagba. Although even then, in practice, we don't give Hagba to the Gadol Shebetzibur. We give it to whoever has the strength to be able to pick it up. There is another interesting explanation that Golol over here means Shvi, means the person who gets the Aliyah of Shvi. Okay. And he's called Golol in the sense, like after him, the Kriyas HaTorah is over and we wrap it up. Like he's the one who finishes it off. Which you find in many Kehillahs, they do that Shvi is considered a prestigious aliyah. On the other hand, up in Kabbalah, not so much. Shishi is considered more important. I think, for example, in 770, they generally gave the Rebbe Shishi. But then in many places, they often have Shishi is reserved for the most important person over there. But that's up in Kabbalah. The Rebbe would get maftu a lot of times, but I don't think it was a hard and fast rule. I don't know. My impression is that Rebbe often got Shishi, but maybe not. I don't know. Okay. Anyway. Fine. The Amr of Shvatya Amr Rabbi Yechanan, since we're mentioning different things that Rabbi Shvatya said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, so here's another one. Minayin Shemishtamshin Babasko. How do we know that you're allowed to make use of a basko? In other words, Rashi is saying, so let's say you're planning to do something and you hear a voice saying yes or no, so you're allowed to follow it. We don't say it's considered nichush. We don't say it's considered, like, for example, we know the Torah says lois senachshu, and it means, for example, you're not allowed to say, let's say, a black cat crossed my path, therefore I'm not going to do this thing because it's going to be bad luck. You're not allowed to do that. But here, when you hear a voice and you don't know who it's from saying yes or no when you're considering something to do, then you're allowed to do that, and it's not considered nichush. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that what it is you look at it not so much as nichush, not so much as it's a determinant, it's a simen min hashemayim, that what you're doing there about what you're doing. So how do we know that you can do that? Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Vaznechatishmana dava ma'acharecha leimer." Your ears will hear a word from behind you saying, and the pasuk continues, "Zad derech lechuba." This is the way that you should go in. Kisaminu v'chisasmeilu, whether to the right or to the left. So we see, in other words, that there's this concept of you hear a voice from behind you, from somewhere around you, and you follow it. However, the Gemara says, "Vahani mili." Now that only applies to Shama Kol Gavra B'Masa, only if it's when you're in the city, you hear the sound of a man, which is not usual. Usually the men are out in the fields working. So if you hear a sound of a man in the city in the middle of the day, then it's more likely that it means that Hashem made it happen in order for you that in that Dafka should come to your ears in order that it should be a message to you min Hashemayim. Or the Kol Itza B'Dabra. Or vice versa, the sound of a woman out in the field, where again, the women aren't usually out in the field, they're usually in the city. So in other words, if you hear the sound of a man saying yes or no out in the field, then there's nothing to pay attention to. People are out in the field, people are going to be saying yes or no all the time. The same thing a woman in the city. But where it's an unusual thing, then yeah. And v'hudu ama hein hein, v'hudu ama lav lav. Also, it's not just enough that the voice says one time yes or no, it repeats the word yes, or it repeats the word no. So then, with all of those factors, then you can say to yourself, this is a message, min hashamayim, and I should use it at least as a simon for what I'm for to determine what I'm going to do or not going to do. Okay. V'amar ab shvatya amar ab yechanan, kol akorde v'loy ne'ima, a person who reads psukim of Tanakh without a tune, without the trup, in other words, for example, v'shoyne v'loy zimra, or he learns mishnayis without a tune. In fact, you have, by the way, there are old Kisvei Yad and Mishnayos that have Turup on them. There's also a printed edition of the Gemara from the mid 1500s, and they only printed one Masechta of it, and then there was a Gzeira against printing the Gemara. But whatever, there was one Masechta printed where they actually did that. They put Turup on the Mishnayos in appropriate places. So there used to be a concept of learning Mishnayos with Turup as well. So now, so Rav Shvatya is saying that if a person doesn't do that, he says psukim or mishnayis without a tune, all of akos of omer, on such a person, the pasuk says, that criticizes him, v'gama nino sati lehem chukim lo tovim v'gomer, Hashem says, I gave them laws that are no good. In other words, like they're acting like the laws and the Torah are no good, and like they don't consider them important. So maskif labaya, Abaya says, what are you talking about? Mishum de lo yodel of asumi kola. What's it? Because the guy doesn't know how to carry a tune. Mishpotim lo yichyuk behem koris bay. Are you going to say that the second half of the pasuk that Hashem gave you laws by which you can't live? In other words, you're learning Torah in a way that you can't live with it just because you don't know how to carry a tune? What kind of a thing is that? Ella kidira mishaushia. Rather, Abaya says you have to understand the pasuk rather like the mishaushia is saying. If you have two Tamar Chachamim living together in one city, and they don't get along in halacha, which means, in other words, Maharsha says, therefore, they don't want to learn together. So then on them, the pasuk says that Hashem is saying them, I gave them laws that they're acting as though they're no good and mishpatim through which they can't live. Because, in other words, Maharsha says, like this, they should be learning Torah together. And with that, they'd be able to come out with the correct halacha. Because if one of them says a point in Torah, then the other one can slug him up and they can discuss it between them and so forth. And eventually they'll come to the correct halacha. Like this, they don't do it. So they end up coming up with wrong conclusions in halacha because each one is learning by himself rather than learning with the other one. So that's what the pasuk is talking about, not necessarily about a person who's learning without a tune. By the way, Mephoshim explained an interesting point. You know, we often have in the Gemara, we have phrases like chsuri mechsira or mishnah loizazam im koima or things like that. So taka, why? Why do we say there's a phrase missing in the Mishnah? Why didn't Rebbe just add it in? Or why do we say mishnah loizazam im koima, that sometimes you have an original Mishnah that was written a certain way and we keep it that way even though the halacha changed or whatever? The reason is based on this idea that we were saying that they used to learn Mishnayos with a tune. So if you added words or changed around words, then you'd mess up the tune. So therefore, they wouldn't do that. They add an extra word or two, so you'd mess up the tune. So therefore, very often they wouldn't do that. Okay.
I guess what the fun time was.
So there used to be an actual tune for, yeah. Okay. Next, going back to Sifrei Torah, Amar Rav Parnach Amar Rav Yechanan, Kola Oiches Sefer Torah Orum Nikbar Orum. Anybody who holds a Sefer Torah bare, meaning without holding it, with a mantle around it, is going to be buried bare. So on the face of it, it means like it sounds like he's going to be buried without tachrichim. So the Gemara says, "Odom sakudaydach." What do you mean he's going to be buried bare? I mean, what? That's a very harsh punishment for the fact that he just held the Sefer Torah with bare hands. Ela'ema nikbar odom b'loy mitzvahs. Okay, rather what it means is he's going to be buried naked, meaning without mitzvahs. He doesn't like that either. B'loy mitzvahs sakudaydach. What do you mean he loses all of the schar of his mitzvahs because he held the Sefer Torah without a mantle? What it means is he gets buried lacking the schus of that mitzvah. Now, what mitzvah do we mean? So Tosfos first brings that yesh mefroshim, that it means, in other words, he was holding the Sefer Torah at the time. He would have had a schar for the mitzvah of holding the Sefer Torah. Now, the fact that he held it with his bare hands, then he loses that schar. Tosfos says, well, of course not. He's not holding it properly. Why would we think he gets the schar for it? Rather, Tosfos brings from the Riva, what it means is he's lacking the schus of the whatever mitzvah he was doing at that time. Meaning, in other words, let's say, for example, a person is holding a Sefer Torah and leaning from it. But he's holding it with his bare hands, and so we're saying not only he doesn't have the schar for holding the Sefer Torah, the Riva is saying he loses the schar for the leaning that he was doing at that time as well, because he held the Sefer Torah in a disrespectful way. The same way Tosfos is saying, let's say, for example, he's holding it in order to roll it up or in order to correct it or whatever, he shouldn't touch it with his bare hands. There are Rishonim, by the way, who learn that that's mainly because your hands are Tamei, in which case there are Rishonim who learn that if you wash your hands, then maybe it's not an issue. But there are other Rishonim who disagree. So in general, which is why, this is why as much as possible, we try not to touch the bare parchment of the Sefer Torah. You even have, there are Poskim who learn that the same thing is true of the Atzei Chaim as well, which is why you can often find in Velta Shoals where when they hold the Atzei Chaim to make the bracha or whatever, they also hold them with a talus. That's not our minhag. It's not our minhag in general. I don't really have some Chabad schools do it, I guess, but in general, it's not. It doesn't seem to be the widespread minhag in Chabad to do that. The parchment, yes, but that's a chayim note. Tosfos finishes off, on the other hand, when if a person does hold the Sefer Torah with its mantle, then as the pasuk says, Orech yam b'mina v'smo the osha v'chavod. Now, on the face of it, Tosfos is only mentioning that in order to end with a davar tov. On the other hand, so now there's a sicha in Chelet Chav Gimel for Chukas, which is also a siyum. The Rebbe made a siyum then on Masechta Megillah. It's actually Azman Groma. It was in connection with, the Rebbe talks about the details of a Sefer Torah over there. It was in connection with the completion of Mashiach Sefer Torah, Yud Shvat, Tav Shin Lamed. So there was a sicha, which afterwards was Muga, and then put in Chut HaSichas Chelet Chav Gimel. So the Rebbe analyzes our Gemara over here. Now, there's a general rule, we say, that even a sakadaydach, even a hypothesis in the Gemara is still part of Torah. There still has to be some validity to it. So the Gemara is going through the possibilities over here of what it means, nikbar orum. So even though the Gemara rejected the first two possibilities, that means that he's buried without clothes, and that it means that he's buried without the schar of any of his mitzvahs, nevertheless, there has to be some validity to them. So the Rebbe develops the idea in the sicha over there. When we talk about holding the Sefer Torah with its mantle and not touching the bare parchment, there's a few different ways of understanding it. You can understand that it's something on the gavra, that you, the person, should not be touching the Sefer Torah but with your bare hands. You can look at it from the point of view of the chefza, of the Sefer Torah, that the Sefer Torah, because of the covered and the kedusha of it, should not be held without something in between. And then you can talk about also a third possibility is that the mantle is in effect part of the Sefer Torah. And so the Rebbe analyzes in that sicha that the three possibilities that the Gemara went through here are three different, reflect those three different ways. First, when we said nikbar arum, that he's buried without clothes, then it means that's, if we take the view that it's something on the gavra, well, therefore, he touched the Sefer Torah barehanded, and therefore he gets buried bare. Then the Gemara says, no, maybe what it means is that nikbar orum b'loy mitzvahs. If you say that it has to do with the covered of the Torah, well, if he's showing a lack of covered for the Torah, then he loses the schar of his mitzvahs. And then the Gemara says, no, neither of the above. It means the mantle is, in a certain sense, a part of the Sefer Torah, and therefore he loses the schar of the mitzvah that he was doing at that time. And the Rebbe goes on to analyze what Tosfos is saying, therefore, that Tosfos is explaining that what it means is not just that the point is, in other words, that he loses something that he would have gained. It's not just that he's losing something that he had, but he would have gotten a schar for example, now for laning, and he loses it as the result of holding the Sefer Torah without the mantle. And the reason why, the reason why Tosfos finishes off with this phrase about that if he does hold it with the mitpachas, then orich yom miminim, mismayish avachovet, it's not just to end on a good note, it's also because that also reflects the idea that if he holds it with the mitpachas, which we're saying is itself considered in a certain sense part of the Sefer Torah, then therefore he's learning the Torah in the proper way, and therefore he gets the brachas that a person gets for learning Torah l'shma. Or you have l'shma and less l'shma, whatever, but the point is that he's holding it with the mitpachas, and therefore he gets those respective brachas. The Gemara continues. Amar of Yanai Breder of Yanai Sava Mishmeder of Yanai Rabba. So three different Rabbi Yanais over here. Mutav Tigolol Hamitpachas Ba'al Yud Golol Sefer Torah. Better that the mantle should be wrapped rather than the Sefer Torah should be wrapped. So what does that mean? Again, there are a few different explanations. Rashi says it means that you should be wrapping the Sefer Torah by itself and then put the mantle on it. Don't put the mantle on it and then wrap it up. Not becover dick to the Torah to do it that way. There's a few other explanations, including one that's brought from the Gaonim that says that what it means is almost the other way around. That says what you should do is you should be using the mantle. You should have the mantle around the Sefer Torah when you're wrapping it up. That means that afterwards you're going to have part of the mantle is going to get stuck inside and you're going to have to pull it out. Nevertheless, it's better to do that rather than to leave the Sefer Torah uncovered. So we're talking about a certain type of mantle. You also have to remember that among the Sfardim, they don't have a mantle for a Sefer Torah like we do. Instead, they have the Sefer Torah is in a hard wooden case. And then, so they have cloths that go around it. Inside the case, those are the mitpachas that we're describing over here. But the Ran has an explanation. Actually, I think this explanation is more on what we said before, b'chutz and b'fnim, that it has to do with when you wrapping up the Sefer Torah, should be outside the case, and then when you're closing it up, should be inside the case. So you have also over here, when we talk about mutav tigol mitpachas, v'yigol Sefer Torah, then it also may have to do with that. Okay. The Mishnah had finished off. We said that you lay in different times during the year things that are appropriate to that particular Yom Tov or that particular occasion. So we said, because the pasuk says, "Vaydaber Moshe es Moyadei Hashem al Bnei Yisrael," Moshe spoke the Moyadim of Hashem to Bnei Yisrael, which means mitzvosen shiukor in osen kol echad v'achad bizmanoi. The mitzvah is that each one you should be laying in its proper time. 7:45 we'll be davening, Moshe.
Okay.
You
could help me out, maybe?
Right now, we're learning.
We're learning. I'm sorry.
Okay. So there's trolls all around the place. So by Dabba Moshe Mitzvah and Shiukori Noisim Kol Echad Ve'Echad Bizmanoi. So the mitzvah is that each Yom Tov we should lay in about in its proper time. In other words, the point is, why did the Pasuk need to mention by Dabba Moshe? Obviously, we know anytime Hashem told Moshe a mitzvah, he told it over to Bnei Yisrael. So by Dabba Moshe, it's Moyadei Hashem Bnei Yisrael, means that not only when Hashem first gave him the mitzvah did he explain it to the Yidden, but then each Yom Tov he would explain it again before the Yom Tov or on the Yom Tov. So Tana Rabbana, we learn in a Braisa. Moshe Tikkun Lehem Yisrael. Moshe made a takana for the Jewish people. She was shoylin b'doshin b'inyan shoyoyim, that they should be asking questions and they should be doshining about something that has to do with the day. Hilchas Pesach haPesach, Hilchas Atzeres baAtzeres, Hilchas Chag b'Chag. Marsha points out, we don't mention over here Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because what's the theme of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Shuvah. Well, that you shouldn't just be saving for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You should be learning about that and doing that all year. But when it comes to Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkos, those specifically you have it during that time. Now, we learned a few days ago that there's an Indian that you're supposed to be learning them 30 days before. So what are we saying over here? So what are we talking about? Ba-Pesach, Ba-Atzeres, and Ba-Chag. So there are a few different explanations. One of them is that during the 30 days, we mean primarily it's the time for people to be asking shailos. Meaning, in other words, there's a halacha that says, let's say two people come to a rav with shailas. One of them, so which one does the rav answer first? So you have a few different details. One of them is, if one of them is negeya currently and the other one not, then the rav has to deal with the one that's negeya currently first. So now, if let's say within 30 days before Pesach, one person comes with a shaila on Hilchas Pesach and the other one is coming with a shaila on something else, then the rav first has to deal with the one with Hilchas Pesach because it's during the season of it. There are Mephoshim that talk about the idea that specifically with Pesach, you need to be doing 30 days beforehand because it has a tremendous number of halachas, whereas with the other Yom Tovim, it's enough to learn the halachas on the day itself. The Alter Rebbe phrases it as follows at the beginning of Hilchos Pesach. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you had to, with all the Yom Tovim, they had to be darshaning about it 30 days before the Yom Tov. Not so much so people know the halachas of the Yom Tov, but more so people know the Yom Tov is coming and start preparing. They have to prepare a korban after all. So therefore, so they would have that. After the korban, the takana still exists. So therefore, you have that you are sholem v'doshin. The Rav is darshaning and explaining to the people within 30 days before the Yom Tov. And then on the Yom Tov itself, you don't necessarily have to be teaching the halachas because already you've been teaching them during the 30 days before that. Rather, on the Yom Tov itself, you can be darshaning and talking about in Yonei Shoyim, meaning, in other words, about Yetzias Mitzrayim and about Matan Torah and about the Anani HaKavod and so forth. Not so much you teach about the actual practical halachas to the extent that's necessary, but mostly you can be focusing on in Yonei Shoyim like that because you've already been teaching the halachas during the 30 days before that. So therefore, so this is also the source, therefore we're saying that on the Yom Tov itself, we have a Kriya that talks about in Yonei Shoyim. So on Pesach itself, you want to have a Kriya that talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim. On Shavuos, you want to have a Kriya that talks about the concept of Shavuos. And that's we said yesterday that we do the on the first day of Shavuos, in particular, we do the story of Matan Torah. So each one, you have an appropriate Kriya for that day. Hadron Alach B'nei Iris, Lukul HaMasech Megillah. Mazel Tov. Shkoyach, everyone.